Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to EAN Cast's weekly neurology. My name is Luca Sebastianelli. I'm director of the Neurorehabilitation Unit in Vipiteno, Italy, and currently co-chair of the EAN Neurotraumatology Panel together with Peter Voss. This month's topic is neurotraumatology, and today we will talk about assessment of prognosis in TBI. My guest today is Professor Olli Tenovo. He's a former professor of neurotraumatology at the University of Turku, Finland. He is one of the leading experts in the field of acute and long-term care TBI patients, including the areas of neuroimaging, blood biomarkers, and neurorehabilitation. So welcome, Olli, to be here.
Thank you, Luca.
So my first question for you is, what are the factors that most influence the prognosis after TBI?
Well, that's a huge question. First of all, I would like to remind about TBI that traumatic brain injury, TBI, has been said as the man's most complex disease in a man's most complex organ. And I think the COVID pandemic has learned teach us something about how much biology can affect your outcomes. People get the same virus and somebody doesn't get any symptoms and somebody died because of the disease. So I would like to remind those facts when we think about assessing the prognosis of TBI, especially in the acute phase. So to put it short, it's often excluding the extreme cases in the severe end, it's usually impossible to assess the prognosis acutely because of the complexity of TBI. And another important issue about the prognosis, the difficulty in doing the prognosis, especially in the acute phase, is the very dynamic nature of TBI. It's a very dynamic injury. So assessment at one point maybe may give you some kind of estimate, but another assessment at another point may give a wholly different estimate. So those are, in a way, the main issues when thinking about the prognosis. But of course, if we try to think about a little bit in more detail what kind of factors affect the prognosis, we have pre-injury factors such as age, former physical and mental health, if the patient has had earlier TBIs, what is her or his cognitive reserve, and of course genetics. So we know from research that genetics is very important. It's statistically, it's determines about at least 1/4 of the outcome. But of course, in individual cases, the impact may be much higher. There was recently a very interesting study in laboratory animals. In animals, you can make an identical injury for each animal, and the researchers had different genetic strains of mice. So they were not any knockout mice or that kind of, but they were genetically different. And they found out that from the same injury, the outcomes were extremely different depending on the genetic of the mice. So that's something we don't often think how much, in a way, this biology can affect the outcome. Then, of course, we have these injury-related outcomes. We know that there are no two traumatic brain injuries which are identical. So every injury is different. What is the force of the injury affecting the brain, and especially what is the direction? That's hugely important. We know that from many studies, for example, in animals, how much the direction of the force is, but it's usually a factor that we don't get any reliable information about. Of course, if there are extracranial injuries simultaneously, how is our treatment? Are there treatment delays? Does the patient develop secondary injuries? And how much there is diffuse axonal injury, which is often the main driver of the long-term outcome. And then there is this neuroinflammation, which seems to be a factor affecting the long-term outcome, but we don't know sufficiently why some people develop this chronic neuroinflammation and some don't. And of course, there are also post-injury factors such as how much you give rehabilitation and other treatments, what is the coping style of the patient, what kind of life conditions there are, and do we give time for recovery for the patient. So there are so many variables that maybe this has helped to understand why the outcomes are so often so unpredictable, especially acutely.
So you mentioned that age and pre-existing health condition influence TBI recovery. Age and health condition are evolving in population. So is there also an evolution in the epidemiology of TBI?
Yeah, sure, definitely, especially in high-income countries, there has been a huge shift in the epidemiology of TBI. So I remember when in the 90s we said that TBI is a disease of young men, but currently the mean age of patients with TBI is well over 50 years in high-income countries, and especially the number of TBIs in the elderly has shown a huge increase during the last two or three decades. So in a way, a typical patient nowadays is an elderly patient who has had sustained a TBI in a fall. So that's the usual case. And of course, this makes TBI a little bit different disease because we know that brain anatomy is a little bit different. For example, elderly people don't develop epidural hematomas or only rarely develop epidural hematomas. They have more room because of age-related atrophy, but they develop more easily chronic subdural hematomas. And of course, elderly people often have pre-existing health conditions which affect their recovery. They have less cognitive reserve. The immunological and biological responses are different from younger adults. But necessarily all these differences are not negative. So I think we have had some kind of nihilism against TBI on TBIs in the elderly, but research has shown that also elderly people can show a remarkable recovery even from a little bit more severe TBIs.
Is still the severity of traumatic brain injury a determining factor in the prognosis of patients? What do you think about it?
Yes, but the concept of severity is very problematic. The classical ways to classify TBI severity and divide it as a mild, moderate, and severe. A huge number of studies have shown that these adjectives are often misleading, and that's actually a reason why the international traumatic brain injury community has decided to abandon these adjectives and this crude classification to mild, moderate, and severe. We are currently developing on new, more refined and more accurate classification, avoiding these kind of adjectives that may be misleading and probably harmful for the patient, because they may be harmful at the both ends. It may cause that patients with severe injury are not treated sufficiently, and maybe we lose their recovery potential because of those decisions that are made during the acute phase. And on the other hand, we often think that patients with mild TBI don't require follow-up or any care, which has been shown to be a false prediction in so many cases. So, and actually, the initiative for this change has also come from the patients, because they don't want us to use that kind of adjectives, which give them a label which may be false leading and doesn't describe their problems.
Yeah. How has neuroimaging improved in predict TBI outcomes?
We have quite a lot of potential to do better with imaging, but it has been harmfully slow to adopt in the clinical routine. So we have used in research diffusion tensor imaging. As I said, diffuse axonal injury is one of the main drivers of the long-term outcome. And the problem is that our conventional imaging, whether we speak about CT or MRI, it's actually unable to show diffuse axonal injury. And the only imaging methodology that is able to show diffuse axonal injury is diffusion tensor imaging, but it's still not clinical routine almost anywhere. That's because of the technical harmonization problems and the interpretation problems with that methodology. I know that there is a lot of effort to overcome these problems, and I'm sure that diffusion tensor imaging will become a tool also in clinical work. For example, studies have shown that if we try to predict the outcome on those patients where conventional imaging is normal, early diffusion tensor imaging is highly predictive of the outcome on those patients. So we have potential to do better, also use the current imaging tool, CT or MRI, in a more refined way to do quantitative imaging, which gives us much more information than the normal visual interpretation. But I'm sure that we will see progress in these in the forthcoming years.
And what about blood biomarkers? So can they predict recovery in TBI patients?
There are multiple biomarker candidates that are promising. Maybe the most studies are glial fibrillar acidic protein, GFAP, which has its origin in glial cells, and neurofilament light, which has its origin in axons, and they are both quite specific for the central nervous system. So there is quite a lot of evidence that these biomarkers are connected both with the short and long-term recovery and outcome. But the problem with the biomarker assays is that if we take a biomarker assay at only one time point, because of the very dynamic nature of TBI, we don't know if the levels of the biomarker are at that point, are they decreasing or are they increasing? So because of this dynamic nature and the complexity of TBI, I think that it's not realistic to expect something which would be in a way a troponin of the brain, so that there would be only one biomarker which could give us sufficient information. We probably need different types of biomarkers combined as a panel, and also then probably serial samples, so that we know what's really going on. But definitely the biomarkers will be a major change in the evaluation and also prognostication of TBIs. I'm sure about that.
I think one truly interesting concept you mentioned is the dynamic nature of TBI. It seems to me that the tools that are useful in the acute phase are less useful to design a trajectory to predict the recovery of TBI patients?
Yes, it may be so, but it may be also a little bit a lack of sufficient research because, for example, if we speak about biomarker research, the vast majority of papers or studies that have been done have used so-called admission samples. As I said, if we would follow what happens for the biomarker levels, and speaking about the neurofilament light, which in a way reflects a diffuse axonal injury, we know that from its dynamics that it peaks only about 10 days or about 2 weeks after the injury. So probably in many cases who don't show rapid recovery, we could well get important information from biomarkers 1 or 2 weeks after the injury, which could be highly informative about the nature of the injury and about the outcome. But definitely the more research is needed so that we can actually know how we should use the biomarkers in the clinics. And the same holds true also to some extent with imaging. So also because the injury is dynamic, also the imaging findings are dynamic. So actually we don't know very reliably what would be the optimal point to take, for example, MRI and using what techniques, because different techniques or sequences in MRI show different things. So all these problems, I think, nicely describe the complexity of the TBI also, and also the dynamic nature, and makes easy to understand how difficult it is to make prognosis, especially during the early phases of the injury.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. What role does rehabilitation play in improving the prognosis of TBI patients?
Of course, rehabilitation or treatment in general is very important. Usually we give rehabilitation only acutely, only for the more severe cases who are treated in hospital, but of also those patients who have so-called milder injuries but are strongly symptomatic still, for example, after 2 weeks. They should get rapid access to rehabilitation because the longer we wait, the more complex the problems get. So that's a general truth also in many other conditions. So we should provide the rehabilitation and support early on to prevent the problems getting more too complex and patients developing secondary problems. In that sense, early rehabilitation and guidance is quite important. And of course, if we think about the more severe cases, we have two major problems. Some patients may still be in the phase of post-traumatic amnesia, where they don't remember the following day what was learned or what was done the previous day. That also, of course, causes some challenges for the rehabilitation, but still the motor learning may be working. The other problem is the lack of self-awareness, which is often maybe quite severe, especially in the early phases, and that is often a big challenge for the rehabilitation specialists. And in worst cases, may ruin all our efforts if the patient doesn't develop any kind of self-awareness of the problems.
TBI is now considered a chronic disease. What are the effects of TBI in chronic evolution of patients?
Yeah, indeed. TBI has been shown to fulfill all the criteria for a chronic disease or chronic condition, and it's in many countries officially approved as a chronic condition. And that's actually because of many things. We know that in the long run, there is almost about 1/4 of the patients who show long-term decline. So the concept that all patients, of course, I think that all patients or almost all patients show some kind of initial recovery during the first weeks, but by time, indeed, about 1/4 shows a long-term decline. The neuroinflammation that I mentioned earlier is probably one of the mechanisms leading to this kind of long-term decline. Of course, there may be other reasons in individual cases. If you have if you are an aging person and you have lost your cognitive reserve, the effects of TBI combined with the aging brain may cause a long-term decline. If you develop post-traumatic epilepsy, it may cause long-term decline. So there are also other reasons that may be behind. But we know also that TBI increases the risk for many late effects. It increases the risk of many neurodegenerative conditions, increases the risk of stroke and many other health conditions, and especially the risk of many psychiatric disorders in the long run. So there are many, many long-term potential consequences. Of course, these are statistics, and every patient is different. So we can't we cannot say that your future will be will be pessimistic. Of course, we can see also different kind of stories, but many patients have these long-term problems and develop long-term consequences.
And how do you foresee future innovation and technologies improving prognosis and treatment for TBI patients?
I think that one of the changes that we should expect to happen quite soon is that we should have both using biomarkers and imaging, we should have tools to more accurately characterize individual injuries. So what is the exact type of the injury in these particular patients? What kind of pathophysiologies are going on? And if we are able to more accurately characterize the individual patients, we are able to develop targeted interventions. The reason why all pharmacological interventions in the acute phase in TBI have failed this far is because we haven't had tools to classify these patients accurately enough. So we have to know what kind of pathophysiologies are going on so that we can target them. So that is probably the most important thing that will take place in the near future. And I know that there are, for example, many treatments being developed against neuroinflammation, which is probably one of the main drivers of the long-term problems. And of course, there are many other things going on. There are efforts within functional neuroscience where we can examine the functionality of the brain, how it works after the injury, what kind of connections are maybe not working sufficiently, and we can use different kind of stimulations, for example, electrical or magnetic stimulations, targeted stimulations to try to overcome these problems and in a way enhance the brain plasticity to overcome the consequences of the TBI. I think those are at least in a way, innovations that probably will help these patients in, let's say, during the next decade.
Well, thank you. So we can conclude that the assessment of prognosis in TBI is a specialized and multifactorial process and a dynamic process. And the correct prognosis allows the most appropriate resource to be allocated to the right patients. And probably, I think the most important thing you said is a severe head injury does not mean a poor prognosis and vice versa, as many factors other than the severity of the trauma can influence recovery. So thank you very much, Professor Tenovo, and thanks to the audience for your attention.
Thank you for inviting me.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.